Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
So here's what's amazing, dude, is that like I put your name into my calendar setting because in my mind I've seen you like 2 years ago. It was 2015. So think how different the gambling world and betting world has been in 6 years. Mm-hmm. But like back then it was like new, right? It was like, oh, gambling's finally legal. And I remember specifically at the time we were talking about we're going to back up, by the way, and talk history, but I remember I have to just start here because back then it was DraftKings and FanDuel, right?
Yep.
And I think at the time were we saying that like those were not going to survive, like one was going to absorb the other? Do we ever say that?
They were trying to merge.
But they didn't, clearly.
Yeah. Well, the government told them they couldn't.
Oh, okay.
But that was then.
All right. Well, we'll talk. But I'm just saying that, like, at the time, it was like doors were being opened, right? Mm-hmm. And now they've seemed to have like flung open, right? And so I think it's kind of better that we're not doing this till now. I feel like in some ways because it's kind of like
depending on where you want to go, but sure.
Okay. So we have to back up though and tell the story of us, okay, of young Adam Wexler, who I met. What grade? Were you a senior in college? Were you a junior in college?
I was definitely out of school.
You were out of school. Okay, then why do I feel like you and your girlfriend at the time, RIP, I mean, she's not dead, but I assume she's not your wife anymore.
husband and three kids these days.
She has a husband and three kids? Yeah. All right, congratulations. When you came to work for me, okay, in my old life, mm-hmm. You weren't a student anymore? I feel like you were like Athens.
No, I was still living in Athens pursuing my first startup. So this was, you know, just picking up, you know, odd jobs to you know, make the ends meet
right
back in the day.
So when you're me, okay, you really like honestly like dream of a guy like you. Like you want somebody like, because these part-time gigs, you know, you get good people, you get not great people. But when you get someone who's clearly a self-starter that you can go, hey, can you manage this program for me? I'll pay a little extra. Here's the details, go for it, right? Like those people are hard to find, and like you were like one of those people that's like, okay, I gotta call him first, right? So I hired you for a bunch of jobs. Funny enough, I think I told you this, you're the only one to ever make an insurance claim because you busted your hand open. Do you remember that?
I remember something happening.
I remember being really not mad at you, but just concerned because it was really hard to get insurance back then. Like they didn't understand what I did. They were like, are you an event company? I'm like, no, I'm a vendor at events, and they just didn't understand. And I finally found someone that gave me reasonable insurance. And then you busted your hand opening a fucking Coke can, and you were like, hey, my mom says I should claim this. And I was like, fuck, like my insurance is going to go up. You don't remember this at all?
I have a very vague recollection, but I know that something happened. Yeah.
Okay. Who cared? It didn't matter. Like, I don't think my rates went up, but I remember that happened. So anyway, but I definitely remember you telling me, like very young and excited about this app you were developing. And I just made air quotes. And in my mind, it was 2011. And I was like, great, some kid, some app, whatever. Like, that's not going to go anywhere. Like, well, like I literally gave it no thought whatsoever until a few years later when I first saw you on social. And I was like, oh, this guy's like a real entrepreneur. Like you were the real deal. So tell me what that first app was that I thought was just some weird thing you were doing.
I'll do that, but at some point we got to come back to the one story that is vividly in my memory from that
which
time
is
in my life.
Which is what?
Well, I guess we'll go there now. When I was This is 2011, I guess.
Right.
And
10 years ago.
Yeah. And I must have worked, you know, I don't know. I probably worked 5+, you know, gigs, we'll call them.
Right.
And the last one was America's Mart down the street from right here.
Okay.
And it was, you know, the middle of winter and there was a ice storm that hit the city.
Right.
And it was a 3-day event.
Right.
And it was, I was Adam Wexler. I had my name tag and I held on to my name tag for a long time because it said Adam Wexler, elevator operator. I said, this is about as low as I'm going to get.
I love it.
It's only up from here. And first day went off fine. And then second day comes around and this winter storm just hits.
Right.
And I think I made it the second day. But the third day, I mean, it was dangerous to get there.
Right.
And you in your role says, you know, it doesn't matter what the weather is. Like, we've got
to. Are you going to tell me I was a dick to you? Because well, now I feel really bad.
Well, it got to the point where I was just like, I'm not going. Like, on day three, I did not show up. You know, A, I wasn't very happy about staying in an elevator for, you know, 8 hours a day. but more than that, it was dangerous to get there. So I don't think I showed. So I'll have to apologize if it went down like that.
I thought you were about to tell me that I called you and screamed at you.
I don't remember those.
Okay, specifics. Good. Because, dude, like looking back on life, like I was kind of a lunatic. I was a crazy control freak. Do you not remember any of this? Because I was a bad man. I definitely was a bad manager.
I mean, I'm not going to, you know, pass judgment on him, so it's fine.
You're not going to what?
I'm not too worried about it now.
But you can say it's fine. Was that your experience?
Well, I mean, like, you know, that particular, you know, day, I think you were, you know, once again, just doing what you need to do because you had a commitment to this company or whatever. And I'm like, I'm not showing up. So, you know, that was that.
But I'm saying that, like, if that happened today, right? I would tell my client, like, listen, you can be as mad as you want. I'm not putting my people in danger. Like, which I think I did a pretty, like, I remember I specifically looked out for staff in a way that I wasn't looked out for because I had these staffing jobs where they were like, we can't take a break for lunch because blah, blah, blah. And it's like, no, you have to take a break for lunch. Like, it doesn't matter how busy it is. Mm-hmm. Like, people have to eat. But I probably now would be even better. And I'd be like, listen, like, these people aren't, like, I remember this girl called me and she's like, I can't get out of my driveway. Like, I literally can't get out of my neighborhood. What the fuck do you want me to do? And I remember thinking, like, all right. But I love that you kept the, this can't get lower for me. And I know this podcast is clearly like, I'm here to interview you, but part of it is just we have this dialogue. So for me, I was living in LA and I was dressed up as a potato for a fucking potato promotion. Okay, this is a true story. I remember thinking at the time, like, maybe I'll tell the story in Leno one day when I'm famous because I thought I was going to be a famous comic. But I definitely remember, like, I went into the bathroom and I was, like, changing. And it was one of those, like, catch yourself in the mirror. And it's like, I'm 30 years old and I'm dressed as a potato. This is the fucking worst. Like, where's my life gone? Like, this is the worst. I can only up from here. Like, similar to your story. Mm-hmm. So I love that you fucking kept. And people were like, I can't ride the elevators anymore, Matt. I'm getting too dizzy. And I was like, is that an excuse? Do they just not want to work? But yeah, what a horrible job.
I looked at it on the bright side and I said, maybe I can work on my elevator pitch, but.
Zing. All right. That's awesome. I'm so glad you told that story. I forgot completely about that gig. It's funny because it wasn't the apocalypse a couple years later.
No, it was not that.
It was just, but I definitely remember like people were snowed in and they couldn't. That's so funny. That client lady, she was fucking horrible. I remember her. Like I had to like, it was one of those things where like I had to beg her to get paid and she was horrible. Anyway, let's move on. Onward and upwards. Okay. So let's talk about your first business. What would you call it?
Well, so yeah, I think we're talking 2011. So 2011 was probably the low point of my career.
Lower than elevator operator, Adam Wexler?
It was probably around the same time because basically my original startup that I had been working on since 2007, it was in the music discovery realm. It was a website and did that for 3 or 4 years. And finally, when we went from 5,000 uniques to 50,000 uniques.
Tell people what uniques is.
Unique visitors.
Okay.
And, but then the reality really said, it's like, wow, like we just increased tenfold overnight and yet we still aren't making money and there's no line of sight to making money anytime soon. And I had, you know, if we're really going to go into everything, I mean, I had been living coming out of school. I'd been living on my bookie money. So I made good money in college being a college bookie, which will relate maybe to some of the stuff.
I don't think you've ever revealed this part to me before.
Probably not. So basically I went from, you know, having money to then, you know, and living next to next to nothing in Athens, Georgia, which cost of living is, you know, dirt cheap. And I was the living advisor for my old fraternity house for a couple of years. So I was doing what I needed to do to get by. I would rather do that than live back with my dad in Atlanta.
Or get a real job.
But I was pursuing my passion with this music discovery project. And
can you explain, because again, we got to take people back to 2011. Spotify might have existed, but it certainly wasn't the Spotify we know now, where everyone has it. Can you set the landscape for 2011? Well, everybody didn't even have a smartphone still then. We still had some flips, sure. I think. Maybe I did.
Sure. No, 2011, Spotify had actually just come out with like an API developer program. And so we were actually about to build, we had finally gotten some investors interested, and we were going to build our website into an app that was going to live in the Spotify ecosystem. Think like in the Apple ecosystem. This was like, I don't even know where these things stand with Spotify these days. And, but around the same time, like reality was setting in. It's like, I don't want to take your money if I don't have a plan of like, you know, exactly what this business model is going to look like, et cetera. So, I literally went to my dad probably like not very long after the, incident that we were just talking about. I guess it was probably a couple months later. And I told him, I was like, I think it's time for me to go get that 9-to-5. And this is, you know, 4 or 5 years into, you know, my kind of technology entrepreneurship pursuits. And it was literally the same week that that happened that a light bulb kind of went off about my second concept, which was a solution to a problem that I noticed during my first one, which was I would contact all these music bloggers to help us get the word out. And then I would want them to kind of like broadcast, you know, what
could I do on your app? You say music discovery. What does that mean? Could I download?
So we're still there. So we described it as the cliff notes for the catalog. So essentially you want to get into an artist, you don't know where to begin. Let's say Radiohead, you know, naturally everybody goes to, Spotify or iTunes at the time, and they would go straight down the list. And at the top of these lists is going to be a song called Creep. And everybody knows that song, but literally Radiohead and their fans hate that song.
Right.
Radiohead refused to play that song for 20 years.
Right.
It was their radio hit, but right. They refused to play it. But you go around asking any Radiohead fan, what's your 5-10 favorite Radiohead song? Nobody's going to mention Creep.
Right. It's lame if you say Creep.
Yeah.
Right.
It's super lame.
Right.
So literally with Go Rank 'Em, which was the first startup, literally, we listed out all their entire catalog. You go in and rank your favorite Radiohead songs. I do mine. Everybody does theirs. We put all the collective opinions together, and it's the wisdom of the crowds. It's crowdsourcing. And basically, the best songs, according to the people that know the artist the best, their own fans, are going to rise to the top. Hunting Bears, I think, was like one song that like stood out to me on like in like their catalog, which is like never going to be a radio hit, but like it was a popular song.
So before you realized there was no cheese down that hole, as my dad used to say, before you realized it, where did you think the money was going to come from? People or ads or both?
I think advertising was one, but the revenue stream that we had from day one was we built. We were an affiliate marketer for iTunes and Amazon and eMusic. The problem was we were getting, 5 cents off of every 99-cent download that we would drive. So you had to do big volume. So literally, like Apple would send me like checks in the mail like every quarter, and these would be for like $1.34. I never cashed one of them. I said, this is just laughable. So literally, like, I have these checks in the mail for my first startup from Apple.
Beautiful.
But yeah.
So, but before the checks were so small, you thought, oh, well, we only have to hit 10 million downloads and then we make $1 million. Was it that kind of like sucker's math that I like to call it? Like the entrepreneur?
I described it as the Cliff Notes, but in reality, I could also describe it as a Wikipedia for music discovery. But if I would tell myself that enough times, like it would have hit me. Well, that's a nonprofit,
right?
You know, so right. At some point, something had to give. You can't just be saved by an exit, you know, just a windfall of cash. Like at some point, you got to come up with a business model.
Well, I mean, you know, without making you a saint, to actually have the concept, I don't want to take people's money if I can't give it back to them, like, is actually like seems to be pretty rare these days. Actually, I want to go down a complete other hole now. God okay. damn it. Cause that's, cause I've been watching a lot of Theranos stuff lately. Okay. And you and I like are from the old school, right? And believe in like, okay, I'm going to bootstrap. I'm going to quote unquote fake it till I make it. But Theranos lady, Elizabeth, mm-hmm. and many like her, that somehow in the tech world become, we'll just make a bunch of shit up, and if it doesn't work out, oh well, move on to the next one.
It's a very kind of Silicon Valley mentality, honestly.
Right, but we have our own little version of that here, and I'm sure there's some of that.
Yeah, but everybody's a little more modest around here, and there's not money just, at least for the 15 years that I've been in the industry, money's just not, hasn't been growing off of trees. Now, I think the next generation will have it a lot better than previous generations in Atlanta, of Atlanta tech entrepreneurs, but you know, yeah, it was a very different dynamic in the Silicon Valley, I would say.
You're saying because that bubble burst by the time we started?
So much money. I mean, there were so many venture capital funds that were having outsized returns, like, you know, just getting, you know, their LPs, you know, crazy wealthy off of just, you know, Facebook, you know, Twitter, you know, you name it. I mean, across all these different verticals. So Atlanta, you know, we had a handful of wins, but I wouldn't say like we would have one major, you know, $1 billion win at best every year, maybe every other year. But Atlanta has just been kind of like, we had a bit of interestingly, and this relates to my current venture, but like, you know, Atlanta had a bit of a peak in the late 90s with B2C tech, with Mindspring and WebMD.
Is Earthlink the same as Mindspring? Is that another one?
I think I'm pretty sure those are two different ones.
Who can remember?
But yeah, so I think those are three big ones that came out of Atlanta back then. And then all of a sudden, for the last two decades, Atlanta hasn't really had any big B2C wins. Like probably the two biggest, I would call them, for lack of a better way to put it, flashes in the pan. When you look back at this from a, you know, holistic standpoint, was like Scout Mob had a nice run.
Right.
They were the clear number, you know, three, maybe even number two for a minute behind, you know, Groupon, but then Living Social, both of those got out with a nice outcome. Scout Mob was never able to drive it to a nice exit. Then you had Yik Yak, which came out of nowhere and just like blew up, and they blew up in the Atlanta Tech Village, you know, next to me. And it was just these younger 20s guys that figured out something. And then they got all the Silicon Valley money, and that money steered them in the wrong direction. And they had to deal with bullying in middle schools and just right. like all this stuff. And they raised $70 million. And then literally, I think it was valued at over $400 million at some point. And then they end up selling it for less than $5 million, if I heard wow. correctly. Now I did hear that the founders, you know, took some money off the table along the way when the investors told them to go fast, fast, fast. But you know, as far as, you know, benefiting the city of Atlanta, like that never happened with those two companies in particular. And once again, like since then, I don't know really what we have. Another one that I didn't mention is weather.com is another one that kind of, you know, is based here. I forget if they were originated here. But that's
I know the Weather Channel's from here. So did it come out of that?
Yeah, I think those two are one and the same, maybe. But
one of my neighbors was like a lady on the Weather Channel, I remember. So yeah. they're out of here. So again, this makes me happy that we didn't talk when we talked. Not that there wouldn't be plenty to talk about, but there's just so much more to talk about in the scape of tech, in the scape of betting, in the scape of, you know, Atlanta, like all this stuff, startup, all this stuff like has happened. It's funny when you first say we haven't done anything in the last 20 years, it's like, oh, we're too busy making music. Like that we did great with, right?
No, B2B tech was great in Atlanta, but B2C tech is, I've always noticed, is something that is completely lacking.
But I kind of feel like because businesses will take more chances, businesses will take more money, like they'll buy some piece of software and then fuck, it doesn't work, we'll try the next one.
Well, I think Atlanta's played to our strengths. You know, we have the third largest concentration of Fortune 500. So, like, there's a lot of companies to start. My second venture, you know, we definitely benefited tremendously from having Home Depot, Coca-Cola, you know, Cox Delta. Communications, Delta, all of those in our backyard. Like, those are some of our biggest, you know, clients out of the gates, you know, with my next venture.
Well, let's back up because I do want to hear about, I did not know you started as a bookie. And I want to know what keeping track of and collecting payments was like in, you know, in the early aughts.
Yeah. So that was, 05, 06, maybe into 07.
Cause there's only PayPal really. And not even everybody used that. So
it was a cash.
I was going to say strictly cash.
Yeah, it was straight cash.
Straight cash, homie.
Yeah.
So were you just like knocking on dorm room doors with your big buddy to make sure you collect?
We ran it like a real deal operation. You know, I never did it you know, because I was looking to break the law. I did it because I wanted to make money, and I came from modest means, and you know, I just wanted to, you know, I knew my dad wasn't going to pay for me to, you know, live a little bit nicer of a college experience. So, you know, that had to come from me and my hustle, basically. So, and I always at the time thought it was a lot better than, you know, selling dope, you know, just in town. So the problem was I would go to the bank I would come in with like a bunch of cash, and like, you know, I was like, I wonder what they think of me. Like,
right.
I developed a good, you know, rapport with the ladies over there. But like, I was like, I would never take all my money there, because a lot of it was literally, I was the guy who was stuffing money under the bed. Like that was me back in college.
Right.
But no, it was a great learning experience.
Did you set lines, or you just went on Vegas?
There was a site called Vegas Insider that would lay out all the lines across all the different books, and we would just pick and choose what we thought were the better lines. Now, I was not a sharp. Like, I was not. If we had people that were real sharps, like we could have definitely been beaten, and we weren't a very analytical operation. But what we did do well was we did, you know, figure out how to, you know, put up all the action, you know. You know, take it, and then make sure people got paid, and we got paid. So, I mean, we definitely ran a positive margin, you know, operation. But you know, you had to get creative about, you know, some people are not going to be as inclined to, you know, pay you when they're down as others. So, you know, there's, you know, a lot of little stories, you know, baked into that experience too.
Well, I don't want to make you plead the fifth or anything, but I do want to talk about sort of what plays. 'Cause again, talking about a much less educated audience than today, right? And people who are listening to this who aren't familiar with the gambling world at all, it kind of doesn't matter, but just know that today's gambler is much more sophisticated. And in the old days...
Well, you got a lot of research that you can do. There's all kinds of information.
Everything is out there. And back then, it was kind of like you had, you know, what's called the money line, which is like, this team is favored by so much. And then like around the Super Bowl, you could do fun bets like the fucking, you know, the coin flip and that stuff. For the most part, people are just like, I want to bet on my team to win, or I think this team is favored by too much, so I'm going to take the underdog. But I'm guessing... at a college campus, it's a lot of, well, I'm betting on the dogs regardless, or was it not that? Well,
that's a funny topic. So like when Georgia would play, we would have to like, we would take the line that is like the furthest extent of the dogs, you know, being a favorite. But then we would have to, you know, throw a couple extra. And that's how we would probably make a lot of our money, because Mark Richt did not know how to cover. So we would, you know, push up the line as much as we could with being in reason, and then literally take all that action. It was still 95% dogs. Yeah.
So that's interesting way, because again, for people who don't understand how betting works, the way that Vegas makes money is they want to get as much money on both sides as possible. That's where they set the line. It doesn't necessarily mean that's what's going to happen. It's just, okay, we think we'll get the most bets on both sides if we set it at X. So yeah, I feel like in a college town like that, you could play with it a lot, and that you would probably have like massive swings in your favor, just because people are betting with their brains.
Yeah. No doubt. I mean, you know, and there was definitely a lot of that, no doubt.
Was there a bet or a weekend that like almost broke you? Like, oh fuck, we have to pay out so much.
I mean, I definitely, you know, remember what it was like that first week, where we were just like, we just got to get through the first week. We actually, we specifically made our policy that we would collect and pay on a monthly basis, which we thought by stretching it out over the course of four weekends, odds were going to be in our favor over the longer haul.
Right.
So that just made life a lot easier. Just that the fact
people
that
were fine with that.
Everybody knew that beginning of the month, you either get paid or you got to pay.
Right. And that's what a book is.
And now we would always specifically be the ones to pay first. So if you won, we would be at your doorstep with the money on the first of the month.
Right. Okay. So, but just as it went on, there was never a time that like some crazy upset happened or something weird and you were like, oh shit, well, we're almost broke.
My favorite and least favorite story at the time, was when, so I would basically, you know, as much as this was, we treated it like a job and I had a partner and whatnot, like, you know, we still didn't want to, you know, have it get in the way of our college experience. So like, I remember being at a tailgate one day and I had had a couple drinks in my system, and I was reading off the lines. We had a call in a recording where, I could make a new voicemail recording, and then everybody would call the number and they would get the lines, and then they would leave messages with that based on the lines that I read off. And I specifically, you know, did a new recording, and the game was Florida State, which they is Bobby Bowden days. Like, they were really good. And they were, I want to say there was Florida State, NC State, Florida State minus 19. And literally I read it off as NC State minus 19.
Oh no.
So essentially I gave 38 points to our customers. And we realized the error. I don't know if it was that night or the next day, because we had these all these messages. Now, most people knew that, like, if it was that egregious, like, we weren't going to, you know, take that action. But like, A, it was kind of telling to figure out, like, who actually took the action on that. And then B, for us to have to explain to you, like, why we're not going to pay out on
right.
that.
It was a mistake.
It was an obvious, you know, human error.
Right.
So that was a whole experience of it in of itself.
So when you said the people that took it, meaning they were dicks and they were, like, not your friends, is that what you mean?
Yeah, they basically took, you know, Florida State plus 19 and as the favorite, and expected for us to pay, you know, on that. Now also, fortunately, we had minimums and maximums, so, you know, we were never going to get completely, you know, we were never going to lose our shirt, you know, in one particular bet. But that was
okay. So how did that go from your like side not legal hustle to where we're at, or at least starting Prize Picks?
So I'll just quickly, you know, touch on so. Go Rank'em led to my second venture, which was Insightpool. Started that one in 2011. That was a B2B marketing SaaS, enterprise SaaS, you know, CRM for micro influencers, how I describe it. And I phased down from that one in 2014. And then I had been a fantasy sports, you know, season long, you know, consumer for a number of decades. And I would realize every fall that nobody ever wanted to be the person responsible for collecting the money. So having been a tech entrepreneur, I said, why can't we make some shortcuts to make this person's life a little easier? That's what got me into the industry. And very conveniently, at the same time, Steve Coonan, who I also saw you had on the pod, he had was an investor in my previous company, had just become Hawk CEO and brought me on to kind of do digital strategy right around the same time that I was breaking into the fantasy sports industry. So it was interesting to kind of get the the perspective being on the team side while also kind of doing the startup thing, you know, in the fantasy sports industry.
So did you also work with what's his name? Who's the creative guy they had forever that was really good?
Peter?
Yes. What's his last name?
Sorkoff.
Yeah, Peter. I've been trying to get on the show for a while. I met him once. He said he'd come on. He hasn't. Peter, if you're listening, please come on the show. Did you work with him?
Yeah. We collaborated a good bit. So
can we briefly talk about in 2021 how bad ESPN and Yahoo are still at fantasy football?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they have not made too many innovations. Like, they look, I mean, these are small operations at very big companies, and so that kind of stuff's going
to
happen.
You're telling me fantasy is a small? What's small to them?
Now, what's funny is Yahoo's biggest innovation, arguably in the last year or two, is literally the. So I'm currently on my third product in fantasy sports. Our second one, which was side bets and fantasy leagues, is something that Yahoo has now adopted and integrated within their platform. I don't know how much adoption they're getting from it, and I could tell them all the things that are wrong with it. But it's interesting to see that that's what they've done.
I'm just saying that I was a fantasy guy. Like, I thought I was late to it in 05, and I'm one of those people who my first year like won my league, won $200, have never won a league, have never won since. Mm-hmm. The first league, I was like, this is easy, right? Never won since. In a pick'em league, in a year-long pick'em league, I'm not going to tell you boring. This is like telling fucking bad beat stories. Somebody fucking give a shit. Sorry. We'll tell those offline. And then fucking runner. We don't give a shit. You lost. Anyway, I hadn't done it in a few years, like a few years off. And I started a league. I was like, okay, let me do this. Like, so I started CBS, which I'd used before. And my buddy was like, how does this draft even work? And this is a smart guy. This is a guy who like codes for a living. And I'm like, well, you just go to this. And he's like, this is so fucking non-intuitive. Fuck this. And that's like, that's how you lose people. Mm-hmm. If it's not. And then I thought, well, how has this not gotten so much better in recent years? I didn't even know this. Is this normal? Because I was in two leagues, CBS and I think the other one's ESPN. I can't remember if it's ESPN or Yahoo, but the way they do the playoffs is 2 weeks in a row scores, which to me makes no sense. Is that a normal thing?
Two combined weekends?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like some leagues are set up like that. I don't know if that's default, but like some leagues are set up like that.
Just not good.
But it doesn't sound like you're aware, but like there is one company that has come into the season-long fantasy space called Sleeper, and they have, kudos to them. They've basically grabbed over 3 million people that have adopted a new fantasy platform that is kind of, think of Yahoo meets GroupMe. It's centered around the friend chat.
Right, because half the fun is shit talking.
And Yahoo and ESPN, CBS, they never got that right.
But I'm saying the platform itself, like forget, they've always had like, you could trash talk over here, but it looks like it's 1999, so nobody does it. But I'm just saying the platform itself, right, in 20 plus years, looks still the same. Like, great, I can drop and drag. Like, that's the one improvement you made in 25. I was shocked at how bad it was.
Yep, it's true.
So I assume that's all good for you.
Well, yeah, I mean,
someone who's nimble and can actually make shit people
you
want.
You want to talk Prize Picks now?
We're sort of getting into the. So, I think it's easy. We skip over these things once we've passed them. But I feel like there's definitely probably some like pain points you could talk about. Like, okay, this one died, and then I do this. It's like at the time, it's like it's a big fucking bummer. Usually, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So I'll just kind of talk through the progression of where we are today. So, got in 2014. About season-long fantasy. Talk about, you know, what the timing was like back then. I remember, you know, sitting with Steve Koonin and saying, okay, when do you think, you know, sports betting is going to get legalized? I mean, that was definitely a part of my calculus getting into the industry and just kind of getting somebody like
his. In 2014?
Yeah.
Okay, 7 years ago.
Yeah, so, and you know, I think he was bullish that it would happen, but he definitely didn't think it would happen anytime soon. And I didn't need it to happen tomorrow, but as long as I was positioning myself in a place where there was going to be a tectonic, you know, development. Like I just knew I wanted to be playing in that arena. And I knew that this was generally speaking like an old school industry with just like, it was like a good old, I went to the industry conference. It's like a good old boys conference, just like a bunch of guys who, you know, are fantasy obsessed that, you know, they're not technologists. They're not tech entrepreneurs. I would argue they're like lifers in the industry. And so there was only a handful of people like me that came up. And so, you know, quickly we ditched the first concept. Then we focused on side bets and fantasy leagues. It was called Side Prize. We won a number of awards. Summer 2015, got selected to the Dodgers Accelerator Program, went out to LA for 3 or 4 months. And while we were out there is when FanDuel and DraftKings, like they were on the cover of Fortune in September, and then they were on Outside the Lines in October. You know, all the AGs like saying this is all illegal gambling. So we came back to Atlanta, and six of us, we were scaling down as opposed to scaling up because we couldn't get any money. It was the bottom of the bottom of the industry had fallen out. And then I stuck with it, made another go at it in 2016, thought about, could we take this whole notion of side bets to other places like the golf course or esports, like video game contests. Eventually came all the way back to fantasy. And it was when in middle point of 2017, the Supreme Court said they were going to take up the case. I was like, all right, all systems go. Let's go.
Right.
And also at that point in time, enough states had passed fantasy sports laws that the most notable thing that happened was they never specified fantasy sports contests had to be peer-to-peer. So by not doing that, they basically opened up the door for games against the house. And what I'd realized through the side betting product was that I would want to bet you, but you wouldn't want to bet me. So we would always be talking about like, why can't we just like we'll take the contest as the house because we know you're not going to kick his ass like you think you are or whatever. So that wasn't the product that I thought would be the most mainstream opportunity. So it was more about predictions around fantasy sports lines. So like they say Patrick Mahomes is going to put up 25 fantasy points. Do you think he's going to go over or under that? That was the premise for what would eventually become Prize Picks. And now here we are 4 years later after that.
Okay. Personal note, I hadn't done fantasy in a while. I go look at all the preview boards for the two leagues I'm in. It's like four running backs. Like Mahomes wasn't until like five or six, and then a bunch of other quarterbacks. And I'm like, I don't care what a trend is. Mahomes is going to put up 20 plus points every week. Like in some weeks, 40 points. Why would I not pick Mahomes first? And nobody could tell me why. So I took him first, and he's been, you know, he's had phenomenal weeks. What happened?
What happened to what?
Why would it used to be all QBs, With the first three or four picks.
Oh, no, no, no. In season long, it's always been a running back first.
No, that is not true. That is definitely not true.
Now some people go rogue, but no, it's always led.
I remember Brady was first.
It really depends on how your scoring set up. So some leagues have 6 points for the passing touchdowns. Now, if Mahomes is going to throw 50 touchdowns in 1 year, then yeah, he's the first pick.
I feel like it was always one or two QBs, then the top two running backs, then the couple receivers. I'm wrong?
From my experience, it's always been season-long fantasy has always led with running backs. Daily fantasy leads with quarterbacks, for what it's worth.
Okay. Well, I would never. Now, with my luck, he would get hurt because I've had that happen a lot, right? Like, you pick the guy, and of course he fucking gets hurt. But I can't imagine a world. Next year, probably not. But this year, there was like no way I wasn't picking Mahomes first. You're telling me it's always been that way?
Yeah.
All right. I'd have to go back and look. It feels like it wasn't that way. So when they specify, it doesn't have to be peer-to-peer, and you can take the bets, now you're in business.
Well, now then it was just a matter of what's the ideal format against the house. What's the most mainstream appealing format against the house? So fortunately, like I had been laying the groundwork, you know, a couple years before that, you know, I immediately, you know, by the time the fall rolled around, there was actually two different types of games that I rolled out with a prototype in the fall of 2017. One was, is Mahomes going to go over 25 and all these other guys? And we literally would source the lines from your Yahoo platform or
right.
CBS. You would upload, you know, here's my team, here are the lines. This is what I want to basically predict. The other option was you could combine two players and their collective score. The question was, are they going to go over their collective score? But we quickly realized that people had an edge on that game. And so I ditched that one in favor of the other one.
What was the player edge?
People would basically, they would combine like a somebody who they thought was a lock, like let's say Mahomes, with a kicker who, you know, you can count on for like 3 to 6 points or whatever.
Right.
And the payouts were greater.
Right. Because
you're predicting two, you know, more than two. Or excuse right. me, for that one, for the first one, you were making two individual picks. Those payouts were greater. This one, it was just straight payout, but it was more of a lock because you knew you could count on a kicker, basically. So I don't have to get into that one. So either way, then I guess another quick story that you may appreciate. So for the first 11 months... you know, we launched our private beta. It was called Predict Picks.
Okay.
Did you ever hear about that? Probably not.
No.
Okay. So, you know, you were predicting your picks and that was that. So we were fixing to launch, heading into our launch October of 2018. And we had these guys from up north had like wanted to partner with us, and they were like some radio guys. And like, we were also not like 100% like sold on the name, and we were like testing, like playing around with other, you know, combinations or whatnot right ahead of our launch. But ultimately I was kind of like, I was trying to get consensus from everybody about what should be our name as we go to launch. But then finally what did it was we get a call from these radio guys up north, and they said, we've got some FCC complaints. They think we're saying dick pics on the radio.
Predict pics?
Yeah.
It's not even close, but okay.
No, you say it a couple of times fast.
Predict picks. Yeah, I guess so.
So literally, we were 2 weeks away from me being Adam Wexler, CEO of Predict Picks, for the rest of my life.
Thank God.
And I was like, I've had
lower it. Than elevator operator.
Yeah. So fortunately, we settled in with Prize Picks. We were able to acquire the domain at some point for, I think it was only $19,000, which I was worried it was going to be a lot more
right.
When the time came, but right. on every other platform, we were able to get Prize Picks out of the gates. So,
and so you're year round, not just football.
Oh yeah. We have sports coverage. Like the sport that you can find the most often on Prize Picks is Counter-Strike. It's over 300 days a year. You can basically have action down on Counter-Strike,
which is a video game.
Which are the professionals that play the video games.
Professionals play the video games. So let's talk March 10th, 2020. Basketball shuts down. Sports shuts down. Did you wake up and go, oh, fuck? Did you call your partner and say, oh, fuck? Where were you first 2 weeks of March 2020?
I was in Mexico.
What were you doing there? Just partying?
My first true vacation since the start of Prize Picks, probably.
Nice.
And literally everybody's telling me the world's crashing now, the world's crashing. And I remember exactly where I was where when the NBA said, you know, we're suspending indefinitely or whatever.
However, they turned this fucking thing off, dude. I'm like, this is like, and I never get this many. Maybe it's you because I only got one text.
No worries. And so we literally, I was at the bar, go out to the pool, and I'm like, did you guys see what just happened? Like, NBA's gone. And then, like, everybody's just, you know, doing their thing on vacation.
Right. Who fucking cares?
And I'm over here just like, you know, the world is crashing down. And then, like, one by one, like, leagues in the next 24, 48 hours shut down. And I have to fly back a day early. And I knew that money was already tight. I got a flight that, like, I don't know how I paid, like, less than $200 to get back to Atlanta because I was back to bootstrapping. Because we were also heading into a fundraise. Business was doing well pre-pandemic, but, you know, I knew things were about to get really strained because we were relying heavily on our revenue, and all of our revenue was basically going to zero overnight. So I literally bumped up my flight, you know, like by a day, somehow found a flight that was sub $200 to get back from Mexico, came back. We were 18 full-time, 30 part-time.
Wow.
And, by the next day, we were 1.5 people on salary.
How many? Like, where are those people? Mostly tech. Where are those people working?
Department wise, at the organization. We were spread out. You know, you have some product people, definitely some lines makers. That was a big part of our business, is making sure we set good lines and move the lines as needed. Customer support was always a priority for us from day one.
Right, it's got to be a big one.
Marketing, retention. You know.
How do I find a lines keeper?
Well, it's one of my favorite parts about our business, and why, one of the reasons why I think we kind of, in many ways, lead within our industry, especially when it comes to player-based lines. These guys, I'd say 80% of that department are guys that were sourced directly from our database. So we have enough analytics to go in and see exactly how good you are with your pick percentage and what kind of stuff you play. And so we can get a sense. We do our vetting process by just analyzing your play behavior, basically. And then we would clamp you down and reach out to you with a job offer.
I love it, man. Make those people's fucking day. Yeah. So they're winning. Are they winning 60% of the time? Are they winning 70% of the time? What do you have
These people are patient. You know, they wait until they find the edges, and they just run the math, and you know, they go off of that.
Okay. Do you listen to Simmons at all?
I used to be a big Bill Simmons fan.
Why not anymore?
I just don't have the time to. You know,
so I don't listen to every show, but I definitely listen on Mondays during football season. Him and Cousin Sal, and they do Guess the Lines. Mm-hmm. You know that show?
I don't know the particular show, but I'm not surprised that that's a show.
Okay. So they talk about the week, and it's this is my theory on the entire Ringer. This is my little podcast thing. It's like, I used to listen to like a lot of like NPR and Gimlet stuff, and it ends up being like a lot of woke millennial smug shit that I don't like. Like, you think you're smarter than me, fuck off, right? And then like the other side is like Barstool, which to me is like a lot of fucking garbage, right? I'm impressed with him, right? Impressed with what he's done, right? Because he's like us, just decides to have an idea and runs with it. But most of it is shit. And I feel like Ringer is like guys like me, like right in the middle, right? Like,
I was a big Bill Simmons reader. I'm not a huge podcast consumer, but
right. And Bill Simmons is like. You feel like, you know, what you're supposed to feel like when you read someone like that. Or it's like, this guy's like me, but hilarious. This is like one of my funny friends. Like, that's what. So him and Sal are hilarious because they cap on each other and they cap on each other's teams. And they talk about all the horrible bets they make and all the, like, oh my God, I started this guy in fantasy and I got killed. Why do we do this every year? What? And so, but Sal makes a living, right? Like, Sal makes a living making bets, right? Like, he's got his own channels now, right? There's all these, you know, all these podcasts and shows just about the Guess the Line show is like a joke. It's like, they don't even go, it doesn't matter. Like, if they predict Cowboys by 4 and he's like, I say Cowboys by 5, it's 5.5. I win. It doesn't matter then what the actual line, like, doesn't matter what happens in the game. They just, their game is only Guess the Lines. It's just fun to guess. Anyway. But my point is that, he's got all these shows and they're sponsored by FanDuel. Right. So my question is, for those kinds of guys, are they given a bunch of money to actually bet? And that's one of the things they get out of like working for FanDuel, is that they just get to like, here, bet all this money this weekend? Because I,
they're affiliates of FanDuel, just like I was. My original startup was an affiliate of Apple, you know, and FanDuel.
So they're getting a cut.
Out big money. I mean, I don't know if you saw Pat McAfee's new contract.
Of course.
Keep at this, you know.
Dude, Pat's...
That's the new model, right?
Well, that's why I like guys like Dave and guys like Pat. Is like, that's right up my alley, right? Like, obstacle racing can only get so big, which is why I do this Atlanta thing. It's a whole nother story, is that I just like talking to people. But no, like, Pat's awesome. Like, gambled on himself, and it's paying off in huge ways. I also think we are in that bubble right now. Like, they're just, you know... Simmons got $250 million. He got $30 million a year. Like, I think that bubble's going to pop eventually.
Sports betting's maybe there won't be as many, you know, well-funded competitors. There's going to be consolidation, but it's going to be paying top dollar from an affiliate standpoint for a long time to come.
But I'm saying they're not just affiliates though. They're sponsored by, right? Yeah, so, but I'm saying, are they giving them funds to gamble with? Like,
maybe that's part of the deal. I mean, that's a part of like the way you can encourage your audience to do it is if you're playing, you know, yourself. So I don't know exactly what the details look like.
Okay. So for you guys, you're based here, right? But I can't bet here, correct?
Yeah. Well, we are a fantasy platform.
Okay.
So you can play fantasy sports in Georgia, real money fantasy. So even though we are technically the house, or what we call single player fantasy,
right?
You can download Prize Picks and play right now.
Okay. I'm glad you told me at the end of the season and not before, because there's a bunch of times I'm about to make bets and then the gambling sites, the big ones, right? It says, or where do you live, right? And then it actually knows based on IP. And I'm sure you can get around it with, what do you call it? VPNs, but I've never took the time.
No, you can't.
You can't. Mm-mm. They've solved that.
I mean, that's how regulated the space is. I mean, you know, that's a big deal if you let in people that just have VPNs. So, no, I mean, like, you know, in a state like Georgia, your options right now are, you know, if you want action on a weekly basis, daily fantasy sports,
right?
Or it's offshore, you know, illegal sports betting sites like a Bovada,
right? So, but I'm not fucking with that, right?
Yeah, a lot of people won't. They don't trust it. At some point, Bovada is going to get cracked down on.
Right. It's like if not, it's not when, but if, and like, is your money going to be
if, but when?
Right. And do you want your money stuck in there? Yeah. When that happens,
some people thought that it was happening a week or two ago when Bovada went down for a couple of days.
Oh, people were freaking out.
Yeah.
So for you guys, all 50 states. Like, just for based on what you said to me?
So the way the fantasy sports industry is set up right now is like 20-something states have fantasy sports laws specifically, and then 20 or so don't have fantasy laws, and it rolls into like skill-based gaming laws. It just so happens that many of the ones that put in place laws were some of like the smaller states, but the bigger states never got really around to it. So your Georgia, Texas, California, for example, they're the ones that don't have it, but it is allowable to play in fantasy sports, real money contests. So, you know, out of the gates, you know, we were able to serve, you know, 25 states or so. And then we've gone out and gotten, you know, different licenses in certain other states, like in Alabama has, you have to go get a fantasy sports specific license.
Do you have a guy, like a legal guy that's doing that, showing up to court meetings and doing that shit?
There's no court meetings. I mean, like, we just have to fill out applications and, you know,
online Zooms maybe.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, there's gaming regulators and stuff like that.
But you know what I'm saying? Like all the CBD guys and all the weed guys, like, yeah, you got to have that shit down, because it's like one state at a time kind of thing.
Yeah. The answer is yes. And then, you know, so we've got, you know, lobbyists in multiple states right now. So, you know, looking out for our interests, protecting our interests as this kind of emerging category of fantasy sports, what we call single player fantasy. So Texas, it was a good decision that we were active this past session, because otherwise it could have been problematic. Because somebody tried once our category has grown a lot just in the last 12 months. And once DraftKings got a sniff of it, they tried to, you know, potentially squash it. I think that most people would say that they were the ones trying to do something. And, literally, they were trying to make it so that fantasy sports contests have to have multiple participants. Well, we're like, the precedent has already set. that it doesn't require multiple participants. So we had to protect that ground along with a couple other companies in our space.
So how, like, do you know those guys, the FanDuel guys and the DraftKings guys?
Yeah. I mean, you know, no different people at the companies, and, you know, we're a part of the Fantasy Sports, you know, and Gaming Association and stuff like that. So,
but they were trying to, like,
I do not know definitively who was making issues difficult in Texas. I take that back. I actually do know who was, not willing to bend at all. And that was somebody associated with DraftKings. So I can't tell you that definitively.
So if this e-game, this, what's it called?
Esports.
Yeah, but the thing.
CSGO. Counter-Strike.
This thing. The so if that's number one, is football number two?
I didn't call it
You said this pro league, this pro gaming league that has...
Counter-Strike.
Yeah.
It is the... I think I might have framed it as it's over 300 days a year, you can have action down on it.
Right.
So we're, in terms of our revenue, we get the number one source of our revenue is actually NBA, which makes us different than the traditional sports books. And I would argue it's due to a couple factors. Number one, there's a lot more games, but... More than anything, we have a very visual app. It's a star-driven app. People know the players, arguably, and are more loyal to players than they are to teams.
That's where we're at, which is a new thing.
These are the biggest stars in the world. So, whereas, you know, traditional betting, you know, it's all about team bets, game results, and for that reason, I think, you know, football is king.
Football is king, but I feel like it is becoming. I think Tom sort of like started that thing. Like, I'm just going to go somewhere, bring the people I like, and win here. And that, you know, football was always about your hometown and your team. And because there's only five guys in the court, you could do it easier. Player empowerment, as they call it. So I think we're seeing more of that with football.
That's our big bet as a business is that the future of sports betting in America is going to be player based. And a lot of that is rooted in the fact that we grew up playing fantasy sports because we didn't have the outlet of real of legal betting like the UK did.
My kids know who Mahomes are, they know what OBJ is, but they don't watch football, right? But they know, right? Like, they know Steph Curry, right? But they don't really watch basketball. So just from my personal experience of watching an 8-year-old and a 10-year-old, and now they're, you know, as they was like 5 and 8 and now 10 and 12, like, that's what they relate to. Like, yeah. Watching a game is sometimes boring to them. Like, they just want to see highlights. Like, they are a YouTube gaming, you know, so that's who your future customer is.
Yeah.
So with these guys spending a gajillion dollars, right, and continuing to build the market for you, that's all good news, right?
Oh, yeah.
However, you've got to have, like, I'm guessing your size competitors, that's the dollars you're fighting for, right? Like, how many other yous are there out there?
Well, what's very convenient with where we are in 2021 heading into 2022, FanDuel and DraftKings have kind of, like, in large part, you know, kind of stopped investing money into their fantasy business, and they're now so focused on sports betting and online casino, which is only present in a handful of states. Now, they do national advertising. If you turn on a NBA on TNT game, you'll see FanDuel's pushing like their over under free to play game or whatever, which can apply to like all 50 states. But so they're spending money, I would say, in large part to our benefit, because they're educating the market and conditioning the market to just have action down. And then as far as like our particular category goes, there's one other company that's kind of I wouldn't call them even neck and neck with us, but like in our same kind of peer group this second, I think we've kind of lapped a company that got bought in January by Bally's. And then there's another company that just got bought by Vivid Seats. That's well behind us as well. So, I mean, there's a good 5 to 7 companies like in our single player fantasy category, but we're kind of leading the pack right now.
So is your end game to be bought by a sports book if there's a certain like number in mind, and then you go do something else?
You know, I'm thoroughly enjoying being in the gaming industry right now, and it's an exciting time to be in the space. And what I will say is that and this relates to this podcast, I mean, you know, as a business, myself and my co-founder, like, we are, born and raised in Atlanta. We would love nothing more than to bring a major B2C technology, a consumer win to Atlanta, and the ripple effects of what that can do from all the people that are associated with the company. And then beyond that, you know, another kind of northern star for us is to build a consumer brand that will outlast our lifetimes. Once again, out of Atlanta. And to that point, if we are to go down the path of M&A, we don't want to see Prize Picks be swallowed whole. We want the brand to live on, if anything. But, you know, to your point, and I mentioned earlier, there's going to be consolidation in the space. We've already seen a couple companies in our particular category get swallowed up this year. If we want to be number one, if we have the aspiration to be number one in broader online gambling, then yes, we think that the best way to do so is for us to partner with the likes of a MGM or a Caesars or a Fanatics who's jumping into the space. There's a lot of different types of companies that are getting into space. You got FTX, which is a crypto exchange. You got, who's another random one recently? I mean, Vivid Seats just made a acquisition. So like a bunch of kind of adjacent categories are kind of circling the wagon right now. And, whoever, you know, at some point, if another business, you know, partners with Prize Picks, we think that business will be pretty formidable as, you know, a big time entity in the space.
But if somebody who wasn't very forward thinking, let's just like as simple as possible, if someone was like not that smart, but just wanted to give you some astronomical number,
I don't have a number.
Okay. That's kind of what I was getting at. Mm-hmm. So, which is different, right? Like
than what?
What's that?
Different than what or who?
Well, I mean, a lot of people, like, that's why they get into businesses, is to flip them, or at least, like, because I don't want to work, or I want to start something else, or whatever. Like for me, I don't have one either, just because I know the number doesn't exist. Like, Spartan, I know if Joe DeSena from Spartan said, I want to buy you, I know the number wouldn't be big enough. It's like that I could live off of for 2 years. Like, fuck that. Like, the number would have to be so big, but nobody's offering me that money. So there kind of isn't a number. So I know what you mean.
But one parallel that I can draw that I think will resonate for you is that, you know, I once heard Gary Vee say, the best day and the worst day of my life is going to be the day that I buy the New York Jets.
Right.
And to me, it would be kind of a similar situation, selling Prize Picks.
Right.
Because I thoroughly enjoy the journey,
right,
and everything that comes along with it, all the good, all the bad. And you know, I don't know what the post destination life, you know, is going to look like. I will likely, you know, continue doing, things related to Prize Picks for a long time to come. That said, I do have another business concept that I am very bullish on, that I've been sitting on for over 5 years, that has nothing to do with gaming. So, I mean, I plan to continue being an entrepreneur for a long time. You know, I will have a role at Prize Picks for a long time to come, whether, you know, whatever that may look like. You know, it's, you know, we're just excited about what the future holds right
now. What's the other business?
The simple explanation is strategic planning has become just, you know, the norm in progressive organizations in the 21st century. Quarterly business reviews, however different organizations go about it. But those things have not been translated to the home yet and to marriages and relationships. So kind of bringing that concept to relationships, to kind of keep them on course before they ever get off course. And then also adding some kind of like relationship assistant, which is a combination of human and software components to it.
Okay. I'm intrigued.
Everything that I've ever pursued has been me scratching my own itch. So Okay. Before I go down the path of getting too serious and going down the family path, I would like for that solution to exist, so I know what I need to go build.
Okay. We should definitely talk offline. I'm married. How many? My anniversary. We got married on December 31st. So it always takes me a minute to do the math. So 05. So whatever that is. What is that? 16 years?
About to be, yeah. 16.
We should definitely talk. Yeah, I think, you know, you're like me in that, like something Gary Vee said, like you can't not do it. You know what I mean? Somebody today asked me about like starting a podcast, and I'm like, well, if you just want to do it because it seems kind of fun, like you probably shouldn't even try, because it's a pain in the ass, right? It's a lot of work, very little payoff, especially in the beginning. It's true for any business. But if you can't not do it, like guys like us, you know what I mean? It's just, I can't work for anybody else. That option just doesn't exist for me, right?
Yeah. No, I'm with you there. I mean, like that was always kind of part of it. But I also never wanted to throw on like a, you know, button down shirt and, you know, sport coat.
Right.
There were certain other elements that led me to entrepreneurship, but I also, you know, I think it was in my DNA. It's probably in your DNA. So,
right. Well, yeah, you want to wake up and put a fucking Brave shirt on. And so I was going to ask you something else about Atlanta before I get into my Atlanta favorites. I always ask, like, I always wrap up with like these Atlanta favorites. Well, actually we'll go there now and I'm sure I'll think of the other question I was going to think of. Okay. So this is the typically towards the end of the show, I ask Atlanta favorites. Okay. There are no wrong answers. These are all your opinions. I have to say that now because people used to get nervous when I say I'm going to ask them questions. All right. What is your go-to order at the Waffle House?
Ooh, it's a patty melt. It's not, I guess everybody has to do hash browns, like, you know, with some of the stuff. I have not memorized.
It's okay.
the smothered, covered,
etc. It's okay. I'm also a fan of the patty melt. What is your current favorite place to eat in Atlanta?
Probably Howe's, between the food and the ambiance. I think Howe's is where I would go to kind of celebrate something.
Okay. Publix or Kroger?
I'm not a Publix sub guy. So, I mean, I've grown up on Kroger, even though I think Publix is a step above, but I've grown up on Kroger. So Kroger it is.
Okay. Rank these in importance to you. Okay. Falcons, United, Braves, Hawks.
Can I add some more?
You're going to add some more?
Georgia football.
Oh, Jesus.
Number one.
Right.
Big game coming up. Georgia football, Atlanta Hawks. I am the one and only person you'll ever speak with that will put Georgia basketball in my top three.
Wow.
To the point that I might have to become a booster one day. Just because nobody else gives a shit about Georgia basketball. And we have so much upside that's completely untapped right now. Falcons 4. Braves 5. So I was excited about the World Series, but it's not like if
and so the United are like 6 somewhere.
Yeah, they're number 6. Even though I was there for the championship.
Surprising to me, when I started this podcast in 2017, I was getting United number 1 from almost everybody. I was also interviewing a lot of sort of like in-town artists.
Beltline people.
Beltline people, exactly. And I was like, and a lot of Braves hate. A lot of people pissed about the big move, right? Mm. A lot of people pissed about that. I got to say that I feel the way about the Bulldogs that you feel about everybody else. I would be at Mercedes-Benz, almost called it Fulton County, and watch, you know, more Raiders fans, more Bears fans. Pretty much any team we played had like half the fucking stadium, right? And fair weather as fuck, right? If we're bad, nobody gives a shit. And if we're good, everybody shows up. And like, dude, how are people these fucking massive Bulldog fans? They didn't even go there. They don't have a kid that goes there, and they won't give love to our pro team. So,
well, I think we as much money as we spend into that stadium, we got to figure out how to put people in the club back in the seats.
Right.
It looks ridiculous.
I concur. What do you think your Bulldogs' chances are this weekend? And for the season?
I mean, you know, I like our chances a lot. I don't know when this is going to get released, but I will be down there in Miami for the Orange Bowl.
Okay.
And then I plan to be in Indianapolis for the national championship for a Dogs victory.
Okay. What did you feel about the Bama game?
You know, going in, I probably more than some other people I know knew that, hey, we can lose this. We're still fine. It was a bit disheartening to kind of like, you know, how it went down. But what I think people aren't talking about is like, you know, in the second half of the game, they lost their number one wide receiver. You give us another month, we're about to get all of our receivers back. So like there's a complete reversal in talent that will, transpire into that. We also needed a wake up call. We hadn't been challenged all year. So like I in the grand scheme of things, because it's all about the grand prize at the end of the day, I don't give a shit about the SEC championship. I want the national championship.
Right. Right. Speaking of which, do you get high on your own supply? Do you bet on your teams?
I don't bet on sports these days. Like ever since I became the house, you know, a long time ago, like I'm not much of a sports bettor. I do my season long, but that's also for, you know, social reasons, like less so. For
right. Now, I think that's a good idea. I think it's easy to go bust that way. Right. Like I said, get high on your own supply. You don't want to do that. What's the best concert you've ever seen in Atlanta?
In Atlanta, I can say in the state of Georgia.
Oh, sure.
Was in Athens when My Morning Jacket did an under the sea prom at the 40 Watt. I can tell you that very quickly. I do think
you can't play with that.
My Morning is one of my favorite rock bands, and their show at the Fox Theater was definitely up there. That was probably maybe 7 years ago at this point.
Right. Well, it's funny going back to the relationship question. Do you remember what you told me when I said like you were like you moved to New York? Or did you just spend some time there?
I was splitting time pre-pandemic.
Right. Do you remember like when I asked you why you're moving to New York, do you remember what you said?
What did I say?
Well, you said, well, there's some more opportunities. Well, and I am young and single and have a few bucks. So like, why not go to New York City? Do you not remember saying that?
Maybe something along
that. So now it's 5-6 years later. Do you feel that way? Or like you really want to like, hey, maybe it's time to put some roots down.
No, I mean, you know, I'm, you know, currently single and you know, I take great pride in my business being based out of Atlanta. It'll always be based out of Atlanta. But I also, I do want kids and a family. And before, you know, that part of my life comes around, like I'm not married to being in Atlanta, for what it's worth.
Okay. How old are you now?
36.
Okay. I think that's when I got married. I got married at 34, 35. So this is what almost 50 looks like, dude. I'll be 50 in April.
Well, yeah, good.
Best shape of my life. Maybe in the last couple of years, I might have been slightly more fit, but like literally, like certainly more fit than I was. And I didn't think that was like possible. But being an obstacle racing has definitely helped me like see people like, oh, that guy's 55. Holy shit, he looks amazing. Right. And you also like see people who are like, who are my age and look 65. Right. I was going to ask you something else, Atlanta related. So when you posted something about having your name on the building was like this big goal for you. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, we got into the Atlanta Tech Village right when it went up back in late end of 2012. This is my previous venture in SitePool, but we graduated from the building. You know, they try to be the home for startups between 1 and 30-40 people, and we kind of clipped that, and we ended up moving down the road, and that was 2014 sometime, and that was before they put a sign up in front of the building, which was kind of like a nice, you know, milestone, as well as free advertising, especially with a B2C business. So when I came back to the building for, you know, what would eventually become Prize Picks, I told them I'm coming for the sign. And then finally we were able to get our name on the sign because we're now one of the bigger tenants in the building.
So how many employees do you have now?
So we have 40 something full time and about 50 something part time at this point. So about 100 people overall.
How are you acquiring customers?
You know, this fall we spent a good bit of money on television advertising, OTT advertising like Hulu. There's been social media advertising like Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, affiliate marketing. We've got a number of affiliate partners. So, you know, through a wide variety of sources, and we're a real consumer brand these days that spends, you know, a good bit of money. So
if you're on Hulu, how targeted is it, or how targeted can you make it?
You can make it pretty targeted, geo specific, and like I'm not in the weeds on that stuff. We actually brought in we were fortunate to bring in the former FanDuel CMO to kind of guide things for us. So he's a couple days a week with us and kind of guides it. Some younger guys that really kind of spearhead the effort on us, and we've got some great agency partners as well.
Because I definitely get same ads all the time, right? Whether it's YouTube, funny enough, I get the Spartan ads all the time, and it's like that should go to somebody else. Like I'm a customer, right? But I'm just constantly bombarded with Spartan and then like a few other kind of random ass ones, right? Other than like Allstate, which is like every football, like every football ad ever, right? Is me looking at like Mahomes, right? Sure. Pretty much. Because I think I would have noticed if I've seen yours. That's what I was saying. Like I don't know how targeted.
If you visit the site, you'll probably start seeing
that. Oh, okay. Well, let's do that then. So, it's an app, I assume, right?
Yeah. It's in the App Store. We got a lot of great ratings and reviews. You know, these days, you know, we're definitively the third biggest daily fantasy sports company in North America. But we think there's certain metrics where we could literally, we were discussing this in the last week, we think there's certain metrics where we could literally lay a claim to being the number one daily fantasy sports company in North America, ahead of FanDuel or DraftKings in certain areas.
I mean, why do people do that shit all the time anyway? Maybe we just say it. I mean, people are like, oh, I haven't, but okay, so back to, when you, like, again, like these people opening the door for you, but if I'm a, Okay, I guess here's the question. Are your customers, what percentage are like, they've just used the other big ones and they kind of want to try something different, or brand new people that are like me, like, oh shit, I want to spend a few bucks, right?
Well, you know, the bulk of our customers in the first couple of years were definitely people that were daily fantasy sports consumers. They had played on FanDuel or DraftKings. They were sick and tired of losing most of the time. And they could come to Prize Picks where they win a lot more often. And so we had a great, just value that we could, you know, supply to all these consumers.
That's you, right? Because I'm on airplane.
Must be me then.
Yeah, just put it on your lap maybe, just because it's going to shake this like every single time.
That was the bulk of our initial wave of customers. And I think nowadays we're starting to get into more of like poaching people from the offshore, you know, websites or people that have bookies and stuff like that. And sure, there's plenty of people that weren't ever big, you know, sports bettors that, you know, want to be a little more entertained these days watching a game. So, you know, it comes from a good bit of, all over, but, you know, there's a lot of sports fans out there, and we think that there's plenty more that we'll find out about Prize Picks.
All right. Well, I'm going to say something now, this thought that I've had, and it's not the most positive thing, but I have to say it because I've definitely had this thought, okay? Don't be too offended, which is the worst thing you can say to somebody. But when I look at the amount of advertising spent on this, right, and we look at the gazillions of, like, the fact that Caesars is like an actual advertiser, like go to the Caesars sports book and just it's fucking everywhere, right? And that there are a lot of people gambling now who were not gambling before. And there are people who are going to like lose their shirt, right? And I feel like not at the same level. I'm really uncomfortable now because I know this is what you do for a living, but if I didn't say this, I wouldn't be being real.
I know where you're going.
What am I
going
to say?
You know, not at the same level as their responsible gaming.
Well, not to the same level of OxyContin, but a similar thing in like if 10 or 15 years, all these people are broke and they're like, well, it turns out online gaming did all this shit and who's to blame? Is it the companies? Is it us? Is it the sports themselves? Like, I feel like we could be headed for that. And again, I don't think nearly the same level and certainly not as many people dead, but I guess it's the same argument anytime a casino gets built in town. It's like, well, we didn't cause them to come in here. We just gave them the opportunity. And I don't know. Well, what are your thoughts on that stuff?
These are very regulated industries. So, you know, every company, you know, has to, you know, meet certain requirements from a responsible gambling standpoint. And I do think there will come a time as Georgia goes to legalize where it'll be over the top in terms of the advertising and like, you think you can't get away from it now. Like, just wait, you know, post next year, this time next year. But I also believe that eventually there's a wave of emphasis on that much more responsible gambling. And so we are, you know, I talked to our team a good bit about just kind of, you know, approaching it from the right moral standpoint. We're in the business of entertainment. So like, that's how we kind of approach everything. But like, we also talk about like, hey, you know, I would like to think that Prize Picks will look out for this person's, you know, behavior better than Bovada will look out for their behavior, or, you know, surely the offshore will do better than, and I would say even more so than many of the sports betting companies, because those guys are fighting till the death right now. They're publicly traded businesses. Like, we can pick and choose what we want to do. You know, for the longest time, you know, we basically boxed you into not being able to play, you know, large amounts of money. So, you know, we would like to get to know you and what your disposable income looks like, as opposed to just say, you know,
You're telling me there's a limit on how much I can spend today?
Yes, there are limits on Prize Picks.
Right? Okay. So like, a new person can't put $10,000 down, or
I don't think somebody brand new can do that. I know our limits have changed in recent memory. I haven't been as close to it as I once was. It used to be that you couldn't put more than $1,000 on a given entry. But I know we loosened things up, you know, this football season, and then like, different people are in different buckets. So, and then we always have kind of self exclusion opportunities and stuff like that. So believe me, it's definitely a topic that needs to be, you know, addressed. And I think the gaming operators need to lead as much as possible, but it's something that the regulators and the government will tackle, you know, before you know it.
What does self-exclusion mean?
You can say, I want to stop doing it for a month, a year, whatever that time frame may be. Or you could even specify, I don't want to lose, X amount of dollars, doing this, or I'm willing to lose up to X amount.
And then what happens when I reach that amount?
Then you basically get cut off.
Okay. All right. I'm very interested to see where this goes. I guess what you're saying is, I can imagine a world where, every play there's fucking graphics everywhere about betting. Is that what you mean?
I mean, I think we're still generally in the early days, but yeah.
It's funny. You said Mark Richt couldn't cover, right? How much do you think teams and coaches think about this stuff?
I mean, I know Kentucky against Georgia. Mark Stoops thought about it this year when they put a late score and literally called a timeout because they didn't get it in the first time on the 1 or 2 yard line, and then they called a timeout to make sure that they got it in the last play. But it's only going to become more prevalent. I mean, you turn on SportsCenter, that's a huge segment of theirs is, Monday nights bad beats. It's the industry is definitely ever evolving, and it'll be interesting to follow, over the next decade plus.
Have you thought about producing content?
We're going to at some point. We've seen what FanDuel and DraftKings as examples have done, and I think we've got some ideas about how we want to do stuff, and it's just a matter of time before we can tackle that.
Okay, so let's wrap up the Atlanta questions. What is your favorite festival in Atlanta?
Man, when we had Tomorrowworld, that thing was pretty epic, but it's a shame that one left us. Atlanta Festival, typically it's been Music Midtown. I mean, I've gone to that since I was a teenager, and didn't go this past year. Unfortunately, I couldn't find any friends that wanted to go on Sunday. Maybe that's my age showing a little
right.
bit.
I'm pretty sure I saw Radiohead at Music Midtown, like the old one, like in the 90s, like 90. When did Creep come out? Like 94?
Something like that.
Yeah, I think I saw them then. that's like an odd random ass memory I have. All right. So the last question I usually ask is, who should I have next on the Atlanta podcast?
It's a good question. I'd probably try to take you down more of the Atlanta tech scene.
I haven't had a lot of those. I'll take it.
I think maybe a guy by the name of John Birdsong who is trying to kind of do a lot of long form content on many of the major players in the city. John's my age. He's been associated with a lot of great companies that are coming out of town, such as SalesLoft, who just had a massive story in the last week. They got bought by majority stake bought by I think it was it Vista. For $2.3 billion. John was an early guy at SalesLoft, so he may have had a stake in that. These days he's a partner with Atlanta Ventures, which is David Cummings' VC fund or family office that has invested in some of the biggest names in town, like Calendly. Another thing that John is heavily involved in is In-Town Golf Club. It's a very cool new concept that's like a merger of Country Club meets Topgolf with these, TrackMan simulators.
Nice.
John could be a good traffic director of we're answering that question even better than me.
So. Okay. All right. Well, let's make that happen.
Happy to put you on.
I'm really glad we did this. I'm glad that we waited too. I'm glad because that sit down with you in, on the roof or whatever at ATV, like all those years ago, was like so much has happened since then.
Yeah. I mean, things are a lot different. I took my, moderate success from Insightpool and basically parlayed that, to use a betting terminology, with, into what has now become PrizePicks. And this is something I'm going to take a lot of pride out of, when all is said and done.
All right. Good talk, dude.
Yeah, man. Appreciate it.